Hello, my name's Dave Emery, and in the next segment, we're going to re-examine a subject that we've been examining periodically over the years, namely the shooting of Pope John Paul II in May of 1981. This event is covered in great detail in what I think has to be objectively considered the finest work on the subject, namely RFA Program 17 through 21, available from Spitfire of Ben Lomond. That address again, P.O. Box 1179, Ben Lomond, California, 95005. Email address, spitfire@ix.netcom.com. Time permitting, I'll give that again later on in the program. Although the American popular press at the time of the event and afterward made the shooting of Pope John Paul II out to be the work of the KGB acting through the Bulgarian Secret Service, at that time obviously aligned with the former Soviet Union. In fact, information that's come to light since has not only discredited the Bulgarian hypothesis, but in fact has made it quite clear that that hypothesis was invented by the probable authors of the event itself. The evidence suggests that fascist elements within a variety of different Western intelligence services shot Pope John Paul II for a variety of different reasons, including the fact that the tensions that were building around the Solidarity Union in Poland, the Soviet declaration of martial law, or the Soviet inspired declaration of martial law in Poland, and indeed the Pope's opposition to the nuclear arms race, and his advocacy of political recognition of the PLO, none of which sat well with Western intelligence services, were in all likelihood the motivation for the shooting of Pope John Paul II. It is also almost certain that that shooting was not intended to kill Pope John Paul, but rather to influence him back in the more reactionary political direction that had been his custom over the years. Pope John Paul was the political protege of a lay order within the Vatican called Opus Dei, which was extremely reactionary and which dated its heritage back to the fascist government of Francisco Franco in Spain. The founder of Opus Dei, Father José María Escriva de Balaguer, was an ardent supporter of Francisco Franco, and at one point something like 7 or 8 ministers in Franco's government were members of Opus Dei. Opus Dei also has profound connections here in the United States, and it is extremely reactionary. I think it would be fair to characterize much of it, at any rate, as fascist. Although they certainly do not like that moniker, and that might be unfair to some members of the community. But there certainly are some fascist elements that have been allied with Opus Dei, and we're going to talk about that. The Pope was a longtime protege of Opus Dei and had a generally reactionary record in the Vatican. When he began to move away from that reactionary stance, he was shot. I would point out that he was shot with a .22 caliber pistol. Unless a professional assassin is going to use that type of weapon combined with a silencer for a close-up assassination, that is not a weapon someone would use in order to commit a murder. It's almost certain that the Pope was not Mehmet Ali Agha, the Turkish fascist who shot the Pope, was not intending to kill the Pope, but to wound him. And in fact, Agha has hinted as much. Hinted at exactly that. In the previous half-hour segment, we talked about the escape from jail, or from what it was in effect, house arrest in Italy, of Licio Gelli, a former Italian fascist, Italian fascist, Waffen-SS officer, and head of the shadowy P2 Masonic Lodge, which functioned as a de facto crypto-fascist government in Italy in the post-World War II period, and which also had branches around the world, including in Argentina and Monaco, had very strong connections to the American reactionary power structure as well. Licio Gelli and the P2 were implicated in the events in and around the shooting of Pope John Paul II. A key P2 member of the Italian intelligence services, Giuseppe Santavito, appears to have been a key architect of the Bulgarian thesis, and I would note that a P2-connected arms for drugs ring called Stibom is also deeply implicated in the shooting of the Pope. The Stibom arms for drugs ring has, as I like to say, more connections than a switchboard, including connections to elements of U.S. intelligence and former presidents Richard Nixon and Ronald Reagan. The aforementioned RFA programs 20 and 21 go into not only Stibom, but also some of the Western intelligence connections to the shooting of Pope John Paul II. I want to note the recent escape in Italy of Licio Gelli, because that occurs in roughly the same time frame as a number of interesting developments, including the assassination of the head of the Swiss Guard. The Swiss Guard are the traditional papal bodyguards, and the head of the Swiss Guard was recently murdered, ostensibly over a love triangle, but I personally think that that analysis should be taken with a grain of salt. The following article comes from the San Francisco Chronicle of Tuesday, May 5th of 1998. This is an article by Alessandra Stanley of the New York Times. It's Dateline Rome, headlined, Shocking Slayings in Vatican, subtitled Pope's Guard, His Wife, and Young Officer Found Shot. The article basically maintains that the the head of the Swiss Guard, Alois Estermann, Estermann, was involved in a romantic triangle with the fellow who ostensibly shot him and his wife to death, and that perhaps jealousy over the internal power politics of the Swiss Guards may also have been implicated. I cannot state unequivocally that that was not the case, but given some of the political curriculum vitae of Mr. Estermann, and given some of the other things that were going on in Italy around that time, including the escape of Vito Gelli, and a number of interesting developments vis-a-vis the ongoing investigation into the shooting of the Pope, I am skeptical. Skipping down in this article, as we will see, Mr. Estermann was not unconnected to the events of May 13, 1981. That was the day that Mehmet Ali Agha, a member of a Turkish fascist group, shot Pope John Paul II. Skipping down in this article from the Chronicle of Tuesday, May 5th, the slayings were the first inside the Vatican in decades at least. The most notable act of violence within the walls of the Holy See was the attempted assassination of Pope John Paul II in 1981. At the time, Estermann, then a captain and in plain clothes, was a few feet from the Pope when shots by the gunman Mehmet Ali Agha rang out, and he cradled the Pope in his arms, shielding him from further gunshots. One wonders whether perhaps, on the one hand, perhaps Mr. Estermann knew more about the real circumstances surrounding the shooting of the Pope than officialdom has been wanting us to know. One also wonders whether perhaps Mr. Estermann himself might have had some connection with the events. As we shall see, he was reportedly a member of the aforementioned Opus Dei Vatican Order. And one wonders if, in fact, that allegation is true. One wonders whether perhaps he was there as more than just an observer, whether he may have played some role in those events. As we shall see, there certainly appears to have been an element of Vatican insider complicity in some of the events surrounding the shooting of the Pope. I would also note that one should take that assertion that this was the first murder inside of Vatican City in a long time with a grain of salt. The evidence suggests very strongly that Pope John Paul I was murdered. There's a good book about that called In God's Name by David Yalop, and there's discussion of that in RFA program number 18 available from Spitfire, because Pope John Paul I had been moving to sever connections between the Vatican Bank, the IOR, and people connected with the P2 Lodge, whereas his predecessor, Pope Paul VI, had encouraged and forged those links. I would note that Pope Paul VI, as Cardinal Giovanni Battista Montini, had actively aided in the escape of prominent Nazis, including many war criminals, along the Vatican Rat Line. We discussed that in RFA 17, among other programs. Research credit on the following article goes to a member of the listening audience who got this from the Electronic Telegraph, that's the Daily Telegraph of Great Britain. The following article is entitled, Vatican Guard Shot Boss, Quote, to Save Pope, Unquote, and it's by Bruce Johnston in Rome. The article reads, The Swiss Guard, who the Vatican said shot his newly appointed commander and his wife and then himself, quote, in a moment of madness, unquote, wrote before he died that he had been, quote, forced by, quote, them, unquote, to act in order to, quote, protect the Pope. A letter which the Vatican said Vice Corporal Cedric Tournai, 23, wrote to his mother and entrusted to a comrade an hour before he killed Colonel Alois Estermann and his wife Gladys on Monday was published in yesterday's Corriere della Sera. The Vatican said that the young man had acted on impulse after being denied an honor on the grounds of misconduct. But, although Tournai, in his slightly ungrammatical French, unquote, note, refers to being unjustly, unquote, denied a medal, he first writes, Mama, I hope you forgive me, for it was they who have forced me to do what I have done. And, skipping down, of Alois Estermann, the article comments, he is said to have been a spy for the Stasi, the former East German secret police, when a guard to the Pope from 1979 to 1984, when the pontiff was the subject of an assassination attempt now blamed on the KGB. Well, I'm very skeptical about the assertion of an East German connection to Mr. Estermann, although the world of intelligence often involves double and triple agents, because indeed the KGB/Bulgarian thesis is now thoroughly discredited, and in fact, with regard to the investigation into the shooting of Pope John Paul II, the shoe is on the other foot. I find the following item more credible than the allegation that Mr. Estermann was associated with the KGB. The Soviets did it, and indeed the commies did it, excuse for a variety of different things, wears awfully thin in light of the fact that the Soviet Union hasn't existed for years and the Cold War is over. Speaking of Mr. Estermann, the article also goes on to say, he is also believed to have been a member of Opus Dei, the secretive and theologically right-wing Roman Catholic sect. His wife, too, is understood to have been a member of the organization, and Vatican rumors say she worked for Venezuelan intelligence. Again, I wonder about the Opus Dei allegation, including the allegation that his wife might have been connected with that. I'm also skeptical that the alleged Stasi connection. I wonder whether perhaps there may have been more to Alois Estermann than we have been told, and I wonder about his possible knowledge of the real events surrounding the shooting of Pope John Paul, and I also wonder about the possibility of complicity. Again, he was certainly very keenly and very strategically placed with regard to the events of May 13 of 81. I wonder if he may have had knowledge that made him dangerous, or whether perhaps he was an inside participant. Research credit on the following goes to Dave White, our pan-European researcher and translator, who got this from the British Guardian of May 6th of 1998. This is an article by John Hooper, headlined Murder in the Vatican, subtitled, Today should have been a memorable one in the calendar of the Swiss Guard, celebrating their past triumphs. But the murder of its commander and his wife has cast a sinister pall over the Holy City. And there's only one item in this article that I wanted to note. Once again about Mr. Estermann's late wife of Venezuelan extraction. It was an unusual, skipping down in the article, it was an unusual background for the wife of a high Vatican official. She had been the first policewoman in Venezuela. Well, again, one should not make too much of that, I think, but it certainly is interesting, and one wonders whether there is perhaps an intelligence connection to the assassination of Mr. Estermann, and I wonder, in light of the other movement, so to speak, in and around the P2 Lodge with the escape of Licio Gelli at around this same time, I wonder whether perhaps there are connections between these events. This obviously, and I want to make this point emphatically, is a speculative point. I'm not saying necessarily that there is a connection, but I wonder. It's what I've called for so many years on this program, food for thought and grounds for further research. Research credit on the following also goes to Dave White, our pan-European researcher and translator. He got this from the London Times of Thursday, April 9th of 1998. This is an article by Richard Owen in Rome. It's headlined, Vatican Bugged by KGB in Plot to Destroy Pope. Well, again, we're seeing the onus for events in and around the shooting of the Pope placed on the KGB, but as we will see later, and as we examine at considerable length in RFA programs 17 through 21, numbers 20 and 21 in particular, in fact, the authorship of the shooting of the Pope almost certainly was by fascist elements within various Western intelligence agencies. And the Bulgarian thesis was crafted for propaganda purposes during the Cold War. Skipping down in this article, as I mentioned, one of the reasons I have questions about the shooting death of Alois Estermann is that there does appear to have been a Vatican insider role with regard to the events surrounding the shooting of the Pope. Skipping down in this story, Francesco Bruno, B-R-U-N-O, a former Secret Services communications technician, told La Repubblica that there was evidence that Vatican conversations were being, quote, listened to, unquote, during the mysterious kidnapping in July of 1983 of Emanuela Orlandi, O-R-L-A-N-D-I, the 15-year-old daughter of a Vatican administrator. The abduction was an apparent bid by Ali Ajaz's accomplices to force the Italians to release him in exchange for the girl. She has never been found. And the reference to Priori here is Judge Priori, who continues to investigate the shooting of the Pope. We're going to talk about him at considerable length in a minute. The Priori inquiry also reveals for the first time that, 3 days before the murder attempt, Ali Ajah was in the congregation at a Rome parish church visited by the Pope. By an odd coincidence, the official issuing invitations for the Pope's pastoral visits was Signora Orlandi's father. So again, Mehmet Ali Aja, member of the Turkish Grey Wolves, a fascist and pan-Turkist party, was present when the Pope gave Mass, and the person issuing the invitation was Emanuela Orlandi's father, Emanuela Orlandi, later kidnapped. In RFA 14, we discussed the pan-Turkist movement, which has long been allied with international fascism. Pan-Turkists sought to ally themselves not only with international fascism, but with the Third Reich in particular, in hopes of carving out parts of the former Soviet Union in order to reestablish the Turkish Empire. And there are very strong connections between elements of the Grey Wolves, the pan-Turkist and fascist party, and elements of Western intelligence, as discussed in RFA 21, RFA 14, and also a couple of half-hour segments, one of them an updating on the shooting of the Pope, and also indications that some of the Grey Wolves' acts of terror may very well have been connected with Operation Gladio, Operation Stay Behind, a NATO contingency plan to set up guerrilla groups to harass the Red Army or any other communist force in Europe in the event that it should take over, either through force of arms or through peaceful means. And again, all of those programs are available from Spitfire, and apologies if some of this is not immediately accessible or clear to members of the listening audience. I'm in my 19th year on the air, and it takes, as I speak, in June of 1998, and there's no way that I can do justice to all of this material in the limited time frame. Having said that, let's move on. Research credit on the following also goes to Dave White. This also comes from the London Times, this of Wednesday, May 20th of 1998, and this is also from Richard Owen in Rome. And it appears that there is pressure now for Pope John Paul to pardon Mehmet Ali Aja. One wonders whether perhaps the Pope is feeling renewed pressure once again. This article reads in part, Mehmet Ali Aja, the Turkish gunman who tried to kill the Pope, will shortly be allowed out of prison on day release and may be pardoned altogether, according to Italian press reports. Aja, who fired at the Pope on St. Peter's Square on May 13, 1981, was tried and sentenced to life imprisonment in July of the same year. Now 39, he has served 17 years in solitary confinement at a high-security prison at Ancona on the Adriatic coast. Prison officials say he has been, quote, a model prisoner, unquote, and under Italian law, such prisoners are entitled to leave the prison during the day to work and return to their cells at night. Quote, if all the prisoners were like Aja, we could leave the prison doors wide open, unquote, the Ancona prison governor was quoted as saying. Marina Magistrelli, Aja's lawyer, said that all the Red Brigade terrorists involved in the murder of Aldo Moro, the Italian politician, and former prime minister in 1978, had either been freed or granted day release, yet Aja remained behind bars, quote, even though he did not kill anyone, unquote. Now, I would note that the P2 Lodge runs in and around many of the events surrounding the Red Brigades. An Italian parliamentary commission found that Italian fascist and former Waffen-SS officer Licio Gelli was one of the founders of the Red Brigades. And I would note again that Licio Gelli's escape in Italy has occurred at about the same time as the events vis-a-vis the continuing investigation into the shooting of the Pope. Skipping down, Aja has appealed for clemency 5 times. The first 4 applications were refused immediately. But the latest appeal, lodged a year ago, has apparently been given serious consideration because the Pope, who was seeking to, quote, square accounts with history, unquote, before the millennium, indicated to the Italian judicial authorities that he had no objection. Joaquin Navarro Valls, V-A-L-L-S, the Vatican spokesman, said the Pope had forgiven Aja when they met and prayed together in the terrorist's prison cell in 1983, and 2 years ago met Aja's mother, Muzien Aja, in the Vatican. Last November, the pontiff received Aja's brother, Adnan. Judge Rosario Priore, P-R-I-O-R-E, who until this year was in charge of the investigation into the murder attempt, said if Aja was set free, quote, the curtain will come down on the truth, and we will never know the full story. It will disappear with him, unquote. Aja claims he has told investigators everything, unquote, but mystery lingers over whether he acted alone as he claims or had East European accomplices acting on the orders of Moscow. Once again, from the very conservative and now Rupert Murdoch-owned London Times. I'm pretty sure Murdoch controls the Times. It has always been a relatively conservative paper, and I believe that Murdoch now controls that. I may be wrong about that, so don't put that in the beyond dispute category. Note once again the by now thoroughly discredited Bulgarian thesis is being floated here. The Bulgarian hypothesis, for all of the play it got in Western news media, has fallen apart, and indeed, as the investigation has proceeded, it has moved in the direction of fascist elements within Western intelligence services. And I would note that Judge Priori was concerned that if indeed Mehmet Ali Aja is pardoned, that this would end the investigation. That investigation is ongoing. Research and translation credit for on the following goes to Dave White, once again our pan-European researcher and translator. And Dave got the following from the Corriere della Sera of Saturday, April 4th of 1998. This article is entitled, "Pope Still in Terrorist Sites," unquote. It's by M. Antonietta Calabro, C-A-L-A-B-R-O, indicating, as the title states, that the Pope still faces terrorist threats, including from the Grey Wolves, and so the Pope is by no means out of the woods yet. I wonder whether perhaps some of that pressure is to get the Pope to free Aja, and then that would result, as Judge Priori said, in the covering up of the real authors of this crime. The article reads, "The Grey Wolves are still on his trail. The danger for Pope John Paul II isn't over. He still constitutes a target for this strange organization composed of drug traffickers, Islamic fundamentalists, and secret agents. An alarm that will become louder in the months preceding the Jubilee for the new millennium. And it's all the more disturbing because, according to Judge Rosario Priori, the truth about the attack in St. Peter's Square is too embarrassing for too many countries. Secret agents from half a dozen nations tampered with the evidence, created forgeries, and made witnesses disappear." This last sentence again. "And it's all the more disturbing because, according to Judge Rosario Priori, the truth about the attack in St. Peter's Square is too embarrassing for too many countries. Secret agents from half a dozen nations tampered with the evidence, created forgeries, and made witnesses disappear. So the network of accomplices is still operating today. As the investigations move forward, sensational new facts emerge. 3 days before the attack, Aja attended the Pope's visit to a parish church in Rome, thanks to an official invitation." By the way, Emanuela Orlandi's father was the person who extended that invitation. That is restated in this article. "Aja was in the audience, mingling with the crowd, very close to the Pope, even in the area where people had started to receive Holy Communion. Aja's presence is documented by a snapshot taken by some parishioners. Judge Priori has discovered that the person in charge of delivering the invitations for all the papal ceremonies was the father of Emanuela Orlandi, the teenage girl who disappeared on June 22, 1983. A few days later, the Grey Wolves claimed responsibility for the kidnapping and demanded Aja's release. It turns out that the tickets were delivered to the Issa Hotel where Aja was staying. Quote, this circumstance proves the existence of a 1981 plot and of a project that continues still. A project which signifies a high risk for the Pope and a grave danger to our country's institutions. A project which cannot be underestimated. Indeed, it must thwart the preventive plans of intelligence and police forces." Once again, this last couple of sentences, because it's critical. And this again is from Judge Priori. "This circumstance proves the existence of a 1981 plot and of a project that continues still. A project which signifies a high risk for the Pope and a grave danger to our country's institutions. A project which cannot be underestimated. Indeed, it must thwart the preventive plans of intelligence and police forces," unquote. And I would note, in connection with the now discredited Bulgarian thesis, Soviet Union hasn't existed for 7 years, and yet, according to the judge investigating this, this is an ongoing plot, an ongoing investigation, and the Pope is still in danger. Again, quoting, quote, "Now, the Pope is not in any way a person neglected by terrorism. On the contrary, he constitutes a target of the first order to be pursued everywhere, even at the highest cost, like that of a massacre, particularly by terrorism of the Islamic form," unquote. The proof? The unsuccessful attempt on April 12, 1997 in Bosnia-Herzegovina, where 127 kilos of explosives were diffused just before the papal procession passed, and the hijacking of an Air Malta passenger jet in June of 1997 in order to obtain Ajah's release. Indeed, Ajah was never, quote, acting alone, unquote, as he proclaimed shortly after his arrest. And he continues to be not acting alone. By the way, I don't discount the role of Islamic fundamentalists in some of these activities. However, I think there's much more to it than that, and I think some of the forces of international fascism are deeply implicated here. Continuing, again quoting, anyway, no one could ever accuse the Turkish terrorist of not keeping a bargain. Ajah fulfilled his contract, taking years and energy off the Pope's life, unquote. What does the judge suspect? Perhaps that the Grey Wolf's assignment was not to kill the Pope, but rather to conditionalize, limit, and impede the completion of his mission. And I refer interested listeners to RFA 21 for a discussion of that. By the way, I would also note that the bombing attempt on the life of the Pope in April of 1997, according to an article from Clarín, an Argentinian daily, from April 13th of 1997, a Turkish television reporter in Sarajevo said that the Grey Wolves were behind that. Going back to this article from Corriere, what does the judge suspect? Perhaps that the Grey Wolves' assignment was not to kill the Pope, but rather to conditionalize, limit, and impede the completion of his mission. The cooperation Judge Priori received from Italy, America, Turkey, East Germany, Bulgaria, and the Vatican was, quote, minimal or next to nothing, unquote. Again, quoting, in the highest offices of each country, one sees, besides an instinctive protection of their own secrets, a widespread desire to fix the matter in stone, unquote. In particular, Judge Priori accused France and the Holy See, quote, I asked for permission to verify the origin of a November 1980 report from Count Alexandre de Morange, head of the French SDECE, and the possibility of an attack on the Pope. With a formal execution of my request, the Vatican, in fact, prevented the ascertainment of the sources, nature, and recipients of this report, unquote. In addition, France, quote, for years gave protection and refuge, unquote, to Aral Chelik, a.k.a. Atas Bedri, B-E-D-R-I, and is still the main repository of secrets about the attack on the Pope. By the way, Aral Chalik, alias Avni Yasser Musululu, also crops up in connection with the Pizza Connection case as well. Continuing, Chalik was arrested in France in November of 1986, 7 months after the acquittal of the Bulgarians. Judge Priori was not informed of Chalik's whereabouts until 1991. For the judge who directed the 1986 proceedings, the path of the Turkish terrorist is definitely closed. Quote, from my many years' experience, I can state without fear that one cannot build a case on a person of this type. His total untrustworthiness has hampered any verification of the facts, unquote. Untrustworthiness, quote, aggravated by a letter written in September of 1997 in which Ajah himself resolved to carry out a new operation, the retraction of his previous retractions. But the condition of this operation is his freedom. The declaration, unquote, the declarations of Ajah, Chalik, and Abdullah Kotli, quote, came as an intense shock to the Bulgarian thesis, as did the investigations concerning the CIA and the declarations of Francesco Pazienza and SISDE criminologist Francesco Bruno. Another blow to the Bulgarian theory came ironically from, quote, documents seized from the residence of American journalist Claire Sterling, whom Priori describes as, quote, the real instigator of the Bulgarian connection, unquote. By the way, Claire Sterling and her book, The Terror Network, was one of the leading journalists spreading the disinformation about the Bulgarian thesis. And again, I refer interested listeners to RFA 17 through 21 and numerous half-hour segments for fleshing out these arguments. That concludes this segment. My name's Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.